And it is 25 minutes after the hour. It's a Tuesday morning, and we're talking with Dr. Don Clark. We think he's a little remote this morning. He's in, I had it wrong, Don. I thought you were in Nashville. Turns out you're in Orlando, Florida. How are things in Orlando? Have you been to Disney World yet?
Oh, I haven't been to Disney World. No. We are right by Disney World. We're at a Marriott hotel where they have a huge conference center where the NRB is taking place. Yes, it's normally in Nashville, but Nashville was all booked up, and they probably wanted a little bit too much money. And so they didn't have a spot for the NRB this year, so they had to book it somewhere else. And this hotel is, the conference center is absolutely fine. The NRB is really energized.
We were dealing with a Cornwall Alliance article, and we've talked about green energy before in a number of ways. In this particular article, I'll just read the headline because it says volumes, and it says wind and solar power myth has finally been exposed. It talks about the economics of wind energy and solar energy compared to other more standard kinds of energy, including nuclear, and they talks about hydrogen. And basically, the summary of the article is it can't be done. You can't convert to wind and solar realistically. Did you get the same message there, Don?
Loud and clear. And yes, why can't it be done? Well, it certainly can't be done with the current technology that we have today. And part of the, of course, the main reason why it can't be done is that wind and solar is not a consistent source of energy. When the wind blows, okay, you can generate electricity from the wind. And when the sun shines, you can certainly generate electricity. But what about those cloudy days? Are you generating electricity? Well, it turns out that you're not generating electricity, or at least you're not generating the amount of electricity that you think you're going to be generating. You only get, depending, of course, on how cloudy it is, you only get about 50% of the energy of the rated energy, let's say, of the solar panels that you have, that you're trying to collect solar energy from. And so you can only count with wind, it can drop to 10% of the rated capacity for days. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, okay, well, the wind is blowing today, but what about, you know, tomorrow, the next day? And if the wind doesn't blow, you're not generating electricity from the wind. So you can only, you know, you can only count that, well, maybe I'll get 10% of the energy that is, you know, we've got maybe a 20 megawatt generator on this wind turbine. You're only going to get 10% of that on an average. And then, of course, so the calculations come out that, well, gee, it takes 3,000 megawatts of wind and solar generation power, if you will, to replace 1,000 megawatts of traditional power generation, whether that be coal-fired, gas-fired generators. You know, you're only getting a third of the energy that those windmills or solar panels can generate on an average.
There's another huge, huge problem, huge concern here, too, because those numbers seem to indicate that you have, with wind and solar, you need to generate three times the power you really, that you're using at any given moment, because you have to provide power for the times that you're not generating power, and that power has to be stored somehow. And that problem has yet to be solved.
Yes, that's a big, big problem. And right now, of course, we're going to talk about the storage in a minute, but right now, okay, so let's say they do have gas power generators, for example, that can rapidly cycle on and then rapidly cycle off. So you could rapidly cycle on a gas powered generator in those times when your wind or your solar generators are not providing the power. But they found that, by cycling on and off of these things, it's 50% efficient. Or in other words, it takes two times as much uses two times as much energy had you just left the generator on in the first place, the gas power generator. So that's a problem. And if you did that,
left them on, you wouldn't need the solar and wind anyway.
Exactly. So, you know, we're kidding ourselves to think that we're at a point where we'll just build a lot of windmills and a lot of use up a lot of land with windmills as well as solar farms in order to generate electricity. It's estimated. Let's talk about batteries for the moment. It cost $600,000 per kilowatt hour.
Oh wow!
For the batteries to store energy in kilowatt hours is nothing. I mean, you know, if you calculate the amount of energy your one house uses, it can easily use 5,000 kilowatt hours a day. And so we're talking about 1,000 kilowatt hours costing $600,000 in batteries.
Well, actually, let me just reread that, because it says $600,000 per megawatt hour. So it's actually more than that. But still, the cost of this is astounding.
Yeah, per megawatt hour. And, of course, you've got to multiply that by the number of hours that you need energy for.
Mm-hmm.
California, it's estimated that California needs, for example, 200 megawatt hours of stored energy. And so you're looking at a cost, an outlay cost of $120 million in order to provide just the battery for that one state. The batteries needed to store the electricity while the wind and the solar aren't doing their things. So that's a pretty large cost. Now, it's not in the billions, but, you know, it's $120 million is nothing to sneeze at. Then you multiply that across the country. Now we're looking at billions and billions of dollars just in batteries, not to mention, where do you get the copper and the cobalt? I mean, the lithium, for example, and the cobalt that you need in order to build these batteries. Well, who has the copper and the cobalt mines? I mean, the lithium mines, of course, the one country that owns or at least has access to those mines is China.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thanks to the policies of our government, we have allowed China to take over operations in various countries, and one of them was Afghanistan, which we left so abruptly, and thanks, you know, we left $1 billion worth of military equipment there, and China rapidly moved in and says, hey, you know, we can give you some money for your lithium mines, and we'll do the mining, and we'll just pay you a little bit. In matter of fact, we'll just build some roads for you. And that's how
the trade-off, roads for energy. In fact, they're doing that in Latin America as well. And they're sending people over to run the mines, to work
exactly.
in the mines.
They're not even using local labor.
Yeah.
So it's a crazy thing, but that's where we are. What can we expect then if we implement more and more of wind and solar power, replacing conventional power? We can expect that the cost of power is definitely going to increase. And Europe experienced this, and especially, for example, Germany, because they were. You go to Germany, you'll see solar farms pretty much all over the place, dotting the hills, and you'll see some windmills there as well. And their energy costs doubled when they put in those both the solar and the wind. So we can expect, of course, you know, the energy costs to probably double, maybe even triple because of that. And we can expect also frequent blackouts unless we solve the problem, if we indeed need to solve the problem of energy storage during, you know, times when, gee, there's snow covering our solar panels, for example, or as what happened here in Texas with our windmills. It, you know, they froze. They didn't have the heating capacity. They didn't have heated blades, for example, and so the wind generators actually froze when we had that freeze over the last that lasted a week. You got to you got to think about these things before you jump in and do something like this.
You know, there's another aspect of this that the article doesn't deal with, but I have read about it, and disposing of used or broken solar panels and wind turbine blades is becoming a big problem. You can't just carry a wind turbine blade and go dump it in the woods. These are things that just don't return to nature, like trash and trash dumps. So there's going to have to be special depositories for used windmill blades and solar panels. That's another problem that has to be tackled.
Well, yeah, that's disposal of these things is a major problem. And we thought, you know, disposing of radionuclear waste was a problem. This is magnified probably a thousandfold over that, not from the point of view of, okay, you know, we've got now a radioactive area that we need to stay away from, you know, for 1,000 years. It's these things just don't degrade. The blades are made of plastics that don't the blood degrade. They have to be strong enough in order to support their weight.
And they're huge. Even transporting them is a major challenge.
Yeah, no, we did a trip out to West Texas last year. We went to it's called Newsom Days, and it's for vineyard owners. As we were driving out there, we saw truck after truck after truck of the blades being transported to West Texas, where a lot of windmills are. And you wonder, okay, this thing is huge. It's taking up, you know, a semi truck. These were two-piece type of trucks. You know, they had the front end of the blade was on one part of the truck, and then way down the road was the end of the blade on, you know, some wheels. And, you know, so they took up, tremendous amount of road just transporting these things. But, yes, waste is a major problem. Well, now, some ingenious folks have said, hey, you know what we can do? We can actually use the hydroelectric energy as our storage facility. So here's what we'll do. We'll build two giant lakes, and one's going to be elevated over the other one. And we're going to, when we have the electricity, we'll pump the water up to the upper lake. And then when we need the electricity, we'll just open the valve, if you will, and then we'll generate hydroelectric power from that. Well, doing that, you lose 25% of your power just pumping. Now you got to find places where this is actually feasible to do. And, so there's not that many locations where you're going to have two lakes, that where you can dig. Of course, now you're disrupting the environment, the natural environment, because you got to dig these big lakes out. Maybe you can find a natural place where this is done, where you can do this. But the other problem is, even if you do this, you're looking at only being able to generate 6 to 10 hours of stored energy. So, that's really, while it's pretty ingenious, it's not a viable option in the long run. And, of course, if you got big lakes, and depending on where it is, you're going to have a lot of evaporation. So now you got to replace the water in these lakes so that you can keep this going. And so that's making it even less efficient.
Where is Walter Mitty when you need him?
Yeah, I don't know, but they're trying to come up with solutions, and for some reason it's just not working right. Well, some other folks said, let's do some carbon capture storage. This is really not feasible yet, but the idea is we'll take natural gas, which is methane, and we will try to that's the next point. Mm-hmm. But we'll take CO2. So you got CO2 in the atmosphere, and in order to make this, the whole point here is to make a let's generate electricity that is carbon neutral. So if you use fossil fuels, and that's a misnomer, because apparently fossil fuels actually are regenerated, we're finding now as we pump these oil fields dry, we've got oil fields that they said, oh, we pumped them dry here in Texas, for example, and now they're filling back up. And they're saying, okay, where is this oil coming from? So apparently there is a natural process for making oil. So anyway, fossil fuels is a misnomer now. But so we have carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Well, we can theoretically, although no plant has yet to be made, we can take the CO2, we can reduce it into oxygen and carbon, and so we can get back, charcoal, if you will, or carbon out of that. Then we can burn the carbon, and burning the carbon gives you back the CO2. So we make the carbon from the CO2, and then we burn the carbon. Well, it takes, for every ton, for example, of carbon that you get, you produce 3 tons of carbon dioxide from burning that. And so there's a storage issue with this. And so you're producing more, carbon dioxide than you can physically store. So that's a problem. And then they said, well, let's make hydrogen. And so the way we're going to make hydrogen is you've got two choices. One, you can take something like methane or natural gas, and you can reduce that and extract the hydrogen out of that. And then you're left with a bunch of carbon. And so you either have a lot of carbon waste or you burn the carbon, like I just mentioned. But now you're producing, carbon dioxide, and you're supposed to have a carbon neutral plant. So that doesn't work so well. So you got to throw the carbon away or use it for something else in order to get your hydrogen. So you can then burn your hydrogen, not to mention that hydrogen is hard to store because it's a very small molecule. And it seems to seep through tanks. So we have a problem of hydrogen storage. But if you could harness it, then, maybe you could do something with it.
Of course, that's also highly flammable, isn't it? Hydrogen is. They used to fill blimps with that, and we saw the results with the Hindenburg, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So that was catastrophic. Now, there are a lot of engineering has gone on with hydrogen storage, and we now have hydrogen cars, for example. So those problems are slowly being solved. Another way to make hydrogen, which is rather elegant, you take water and you hydrolyze it, and then you get, what do you get out of doing that? And when I say hydrolyze, you need electricity in order to hydrolyze the water to produce hydrogen and oxygen. So now you've got oxygen and you've got hydrogen, and when you combine those, of course, they're combustible and they burn, and actually can burn rather vigorously. But the problem with that, you use up 60% of the energy that you're going to get out of the hydrogen in the electrolysis process. So you don't the alternatives to the wind and the solar, and how do we solve the problem of you know, the storage.
It's clear, I think, that the answers aren't there. And I want to throw one more term out here, because I used to hear this bandied about a lot, and that's fuel cell technology, which goes back to the 19th century. How does that work? Isn't that hydrolysis?
It's hydrolysis, the fuel cells. Yes, it's this hydrogen electrolysis process. And General Motors was working on it for cars, and actually here at Disney World, at the Epcot Center, they had actually a display of one of those vehicles, a prototype of the vehicle on display. You can just plug your car in and at night generate the hydrogen, and of course it's generating oxygen at the same time. Store it in these cells, and then do the reverse process. And when you do the reverse process, of course, coming out of your cells is going to be water. And so that's environmentally clean and safe, except that you're driving around and
That's also been recommended for home heating. You would need a small supply of natural gas to keep the process going and make it efficient. So, lots of ins and outs, ramifications to this myth, they're saying, of the applicability, the reality of solar and wind power. There's an article from the Cornwall Alliance. I put a link in the chat window at Broken Road Radio, brokenroadradio.com. You can click on that and kind of cover what Don has so eloquently covered here. But I guess that we're not there yet. Not even close.
We're not even close. We're not there. We don't have the efficiency on the solar panels. We don't have the storage capabilities yet. We need some miracles in the battery technology, for example. And, you know, with all of these regulations enforcing industry into something like this, these types of discoveries that are needed happen naturally if you have the right incentives and if, you know, people can work on it without having all types of regulations upon them.
Well, I guess we've got the politics of it, but not the science, is what you're saying.
Not as yet. So we need to leave these people alone. Let science and engineers do their trick in their work in the laboratories, and in order to make this a feasible process, if it ever is. And you know, it may never be because of they'd have to come up with new battery technology, which are current, the current battery technology.
It's years away. Yeah, we should mention that Dr. Don is also a member of the board of directors at Creation Moments, their website, creationmoments.com. And there you will find quite a library, a resource of scientific information that speaks to the biblical story of creation. You'll find it fascinating. You'll also find it very useful in your discussions with friends and neighbors and Bible study groups. CreationMoments.com is that website. Time to go. Well, Don, thanks very much. We'll turn you loose here, and we'll talk to you next week, okay?
Okay. See you, Don.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much.
Bye.